Hi, welcome to We Excel Weekly. This is our We Excel podcast that encompasses our mission to empower and unite through passion, purpose, and story. I'm Arabella DeLuco, and I'm your host and also the CEO and founder of We Excel. Today, we have our special guest, Dr. Alicia B. Harvey-Smith. She has dedicated more than 25 years to higher education in a variety of leadership and administrative roles. Committed to leadership excellence, institutional performance, and student success, she is a scholar practitioner whose experience in higher education is both diverse and expansive. Appointed the fourth president and CEO of Pittsburgh Technical College, a private nonprofit regionally accredited college on a beautiful 180-acre campus in Oakdale, Pennsylvania, in April 2019. Dr. Harvey-Smith, the first African-American to hold this post and the first to lead the institution as a nonprofit institution. She is proud of the college's history of student success, spanning nearly 75 years, and its consistency in making one of the nation's highest in-field placement rates of over 95%. Dr. Harvey-Smith, that's such incredible thing. Incredible things. Congratulations.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you so much, Arabella. I'm excited to be here with you.
I'm so excited to meet you. I hear great things. And we're gonna have a nice, fun conversation, you know, about you and about your story and how you ended up where you are today, because that's very inspiring to our viewers, and that's important. And we always say your story matters here. So Dr. Harvey-Smith, let's talk about your upbringing. Where did you grow up, and just where did you grow up, and how did you become an administrative executive at Pittsburgh Technical College?
Wow, what a great question. So my journey starts many years ago. I was born in Baltimore, born and raised in Baltimore. Amazing parents who really instilled in all of my brothers and sisters and myself that education was important. And so born and raised in Baltimore, educated most of my life in Maryland. I had the opportunity to attend one of the oldest all-girls schools in the nation, Western Senior High, still in existence and still the oldest school of its type, single gender institution. Yeah. So excited to be a Westernite. Also, I had the pleasure of going to Morgan State University, which is a historically Black college and university in Maryland. And actually, that's where I met my husband. We've been married 37 years. So Morgan State means a great deal to me and my family. I'm also a graduate of Johns Hopkins University and University of Maryland College Park. And my presidential training is from Harvard University in terms of specialized presidential training. So I have been, I feel, in education my entire life. It's been all around me. And so I think, and to answer your question, how I ended up here, I just think it was a journey that kind of led me here with all of the other experiences. I've worked in student affairs, academic affairs. I've been in all of the spaces in higher ed, and it led to college presidency. I actually was also the first African-American president in New England at a college by the name of River Valley Community College. And so education just means the world to me. I often say it's the thing that most transforms not only the person who's experiencing it, but everyone around them. So that's why I invest in this work. I see my students as critical individuals, not just to our institution, but to their communities. And so we're helping to create that next generation of leaders, and it matters.
Absolutely. It's so cool. And thank you for your work in this field and forging the way. You know, obviously, you know, being the first a few times in your life, how does that feel? How did you feel, you know, forging the way instead of having someone who looks like you and is like you to look up to? What is it like to just forge the way instead?
What a wonderful question. Well, I know that we all wish that at some point there are no more first, that we just naturally are, everyone's in these roles, right? And so I think for anyone who has this as the experience, it can be a heavy one, because you want to always make sure that you are at the very top in terms of excellence, performance, because all eyes are watching. And so the burden of making sure that you're doing everything that needs to be done, and that you're cultivating an environment where there's an appreciation and support for diverse leadership is critical. And so I find it exciting, though. I tend to acclimate to those types of roles because I'm a teacher. I had the pleasure of teaching middle school and high school. And so that's a real part of me. I taught college as well. And so when I come to these environments, I'm both the administrator in terms of college president, and I've served as vice president and all up and down the org. But as president, I'm a teacher as well. I'm also a cheerleader for the organization. I'm a cheerleader for my students, for my faculty, for my staff, and all of that makes a difference. So in short, what does it feel to be the first? It's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah. And it just requires us to continue to make sure that there are others coming behind us to support good work and excellence.
I love that you share that you are a teacher first, because I think it's important, especially in such a leadership role in a higher institution, that you have that connection to the students. You know, I have some friends in administration, and it's always so cool when they start from teaching. Because you know from the ground up, and you really are there with the children. I hear that you write, you have a love for writing. So tell us about that, because we want to focus on, you told us a bit about your story. Now let's talk about your passion as a writer. What led you to that passion, and how did you figure out that this is something that you like to do?
Oh, what a great question. I will tell you, I have loved writing since very young. And I maybe wrote my first poem in seventh grade or sixth grade. And I think I've been writing ever since. It started as a dare. I remember an instructor, I was talking to some classmates, and I said, I could write a poem out of any word. And I remember the instructor saying, well, I challenge you, I'm gonna give you a word. And she did. I think it was peculiar. That was literally the word that she gave me. And so I created a poem right there, and it was so much fun. And I love the reaction of my classmates and my instructor. So I began to continue to write those poems and to share those and to use it as a mechanism later in life to teach. So I have actually used it as a part of what I do in my leadership practice. I try to tell leaders it's so important to be authentically yourself and to be yourself unapologetically. And so part of me is that person who wants to make sure that we're connecting to the heart of those individuals that we're teaching and working with. It's so important. There are two things in my mind. I think about the head, the intellect, right? So we're a college. So intellectually, we're focused on making sure we support the best educational opportunities for students, but the heart as well. And so I think my poetry allows me to connect with that part of those who connect with me.
I think it's so cool, and it's poetry. I think, and what a great art, what a high art, right? and to keep it up too, even when you're so busy in your career, right? I mean, how do you balance your career with how do you balance all of it?
Oh, you know, it's a work in progress. I honestly, it's a work in progress. I think that we do what we love, and we make time for those things that are important to us. And so for me, the balancing act is really, I know that writing is a space for me that calms me, that allows me greater focus. And so if I'm working on a particularly intense project, I know if I go to a space where I'm writing, I'm able to kind of even go back to that project with more energy and more passion. So I balance it by, I write in the evenings, I write on the weekends often, but I just try to make time for that, because that's a space where I can soothe and focus.
I think that's great, great you share about that, because a lot of people who are really busy and who have high level, you know, high executive careers like you do, when I hear them, they always say, oh, I don't have time for a creative pursuit, or I don't have time to, you know, do something I really love to do. Like for me, I'm an oil painter. And so I always say, I feel energized every time I'm at the canvas.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you just make time. Yeah,
it's so important, both for your mental health and physical health as well. It's important to do those things you're passionate about. And interestingly enough, even with my job as president, I'm passionate about leadership. The thing that I've been writing about most recently and look forward to releasing a book on the topic is about leadership and what I see as the essential leadership standards, and what have really helped me over the years to be effective in these workspaces. So I think, you know, the work that you do, you have to love it, you know, do what you love and love what you do. I hear that often, but it really, really matters to love what you do.
Absolutely. And it's cool that you talk about leadership. Is there one memory where you maybe at that time felt like you failed as a leader, but then you realize now that it wasn't a failure? Is there a time like that?
Wow. And there are always times like that, you know, particularly, you know, as you're moving through an organization and you want to create the very best in everything that you're trying to pull together. And I think for me, it's cultivating leadership teams. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And so certainly I can think of projects where you create teams to kind of fulfill those, and they don't necessarily go the way you'd hoped. And so I don't consider those failures, though. I've been saying to my cabinet here at Pittsburgh Technical College that I want to challenge them to be clear that it's okay to fail. You know, I think we should take risks. We should take calculated risks. I don't want us to just go out there without thinking and just jump into something, but I want us to be as innovative and as creative as we can be. And we can't do that if we're not willing to take risks. So there have been examples, a great example certainly would be in spaces where I've been working on creating teams to develop leadership strategies. And those strategies didn't lead to the outcomes that I had hoped. And that the team had hoped. But I thought, you know, I thought that was a failure initially. And then I thought about it. What I gained was a stronger team. What I gained was an opportunity for them to learn from each other and to go back and reassess to create a better outcome the next time. So I think if we look at every failure as an opportunity and look for the lessons in that and be conscious about that to remind ourselves that it's all about learning, I think it makes a big difference.
That's cool. That's so great, because it reminds me of this this workshop that we just held called Your Hero's Journey, and it's for women professionals. And we just held it a few weeks ago, and it was taking the hero's journey, like the Iliad, you know, speaking of high art, the Iliad and you know, the sort of rise and fall of the hero's journey. But then at the end of the hero's journey, the hero still has grown from the beginning where they had started, right? And I think it's cool what you said, but there's ups and downs, but then there's, as long as that, you know, during your journey, you grow.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's so important to remind everyone, and I have to remind myself of this, every experience that we've ever had is a contributor to our success ultimately. And so everything that we do matters. Everything contributes to learning and development. And so there's no wasted experiences. And so if we tell ourselves that, and even when we're going through what I call a valley moment, and we're looking for the lesson in that moment, I think it helps us move through that with more grace and more effectiveness.
This leads me to, you talked about creativity. You talked about learning from, you know, building teams and what works and what doesn't, and growing from that. But how do you think other people can innovate and transform the educational institutions? What do you think? Yeah, I mean, I know that's such a big question, but maybe someone who is in your position or would like to be in your position one day could learn from that?
Sure. You know, I think one of the most important things, certainly for leaders, is to remember that it's important to prepare for the role that you want to enter. So I always say, do not skip steps. I've met so many leaders who want to immediately go from one role to the very top of the organization. And, you know, they don't have time for the things in the middle. I think you grow where you're planted, and you learn each of those steps. You know, you learn from each of those steps. And so for anyone looking to be a president or looking to move through an organization, certainly preparation is critical. Ask yourself, why do I want to be the leader of the organization? These are not easy jobs, and they're certainly jobs that require a lot of passion, a lot of commitment, a lot of energy. And certainly if you're a president, you should certainly be a champion 24/7 for your organization. And so I would, you know, offer that as advice. In addition to being prepared, I certainly would suggest that they find mentors and individuals who can kind of help provide kind of a realistic view of what that role looks like or feels like on the day to day. Because I think sometimes we're not clear on what actually is required to be in a particular role. So finding mentors that can help support that journey, I think is so, so critical.
And do you have any advice on finding mentors? Where would someone, you know, look for one?
Oh, wow. There's so many organizations, leadership organizations for women, leadership organizations for educational professionals. There are many out there, and I would start there. Chambers of Commerce. You know, I always thought it's so important to talk to people in roles that you aspire to. So as you do that, sometimes just asking someone, can I talk with you about your role? And that often will lead to an opportunity for mentorship. And there's this wonderful thing. I love to talk about mentorship from afar. Like there are individuals that so inspire us that they don't have to directly mentor us. We can watch their body of work. We can watch how they interact, and we can learn from that. So there's value in finding individuals who are distinguishing themselves in their fields and doing great work, and to study that and to watch that. So I, you know, my biggest hero is my mom. So I, you know, I learn a lot, have learned a lot from her journey. And certainly that has certainly impacted me as well.
Wow. And so in terms of a Pittsburgh Technical College, what are some exciting things on the horizon that we could look forward to?
Oh, what a great question. Well, we are in our 75th year. So this is our 75th anniversary. And just to give you a little background on Pittsburgh Technical College, we were established in 1946. And PTC was once PTI, Pittsburgh Technical Institute. And it was a for-profit institution, very much focused on workforce development and doing a great job in that space. Over the last 3 years, it's been very transformational. And I was actually brought in to lead the transformation fully to a nonprofit higher ed institution. And so with the name change, accreditation change, we've been really moving effectively forward to get the word out about this amazing institution. We have 10 academic schools, including a school online and School of Trades. We also have more than 30 programs. We're accredited by Middle States or regionally accredited, same accreditors as Penn State and Duquesne. And so really just educating the community on who we are and the great work that we do. We literally have an infill placement rate that's one of the nation's highest, 95%. So students who come to us are aligned with employment as a part of their internship. And so when they graduate, they go immediately into these jobs. And so what's on the horizon? More of that, growing the institution, getting the word out to individuals who are looking to support great students. We're looking for ways to, you hear it all the time, to cut debt for students. And that's something that we're actively doing and looking for support. I'm just so impressed with the work that McKinsey Scott and others are doing around the nation, finding schools and supporting them so that they can support students. So we're looking for that, obviously that type of support, but we're also looking to continue to transform so that our students will continue to transform. So you'll hear about the implementation of our five-year strategic plan that centers around positioning us as an educator of choice for applied and technical education. We're looking at expanding access to higher education, creating a more diverse academic learning experience, cultural competence. So I think there's great things on the horizon for this amazing institution. And so we're out now trying to grow enrollment and let people know the good work that is happening here with our amazing faculty. I'll tell you one fun fact. We have just been awarded our third National Science Foundation grant. So this year, alone, we've brought to the college more than $1 million in funding to support underrepresented students coming into STEM fields. That is one of the most, I would say, most growing and most effective fields right now nationally. And so we're excited to be a part of creating that pipeline for new STEM technicians throughout that field.
That's really great. We were asked by a Canadian university to create a program for them, teaching storytelling to their students, science STEM students and faculty. Yeah, and so we're bringing. I don't know if you heard about it, but we have a Boundless Youth program where it's just a storytelling for self-discovery through filmmaking. And we worked with an all-girls school in the Bronx. And they're fourth graders, and they made their own movies over the course of 8 weeks, all online, technical and also creative skill. But yeah, so we want to take the STEM faculty and students, and then we're going to put them in front of the girls that took our class, and then the faculty and students will then pitch their story, science storytelling idea to them. So I wanted to, you know, the reason why I tell you this is because I think, you know, seeing that you're a poet, and also, but yet you are you lead a college in the vocational technical field. I think there's an interesting place for technical work and also storytelling combined with that.
Oh, absolutely. It sounds like a fascinating.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That's a quote right there. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Harvey Smith. It's such a pleasure to sit down and talk to you and have a conversation. Thank you. And to learn more about Pittsburgh Technical College. And please, where should people go to learn more about you and Pittsburgh Technical College if they're interested?
Oh, absolutely. Please visit our website. There's lots of great information on our programs and a variety of opportunities to learn more. It's www.ptcollege.edu. Please look us up, reach out, give me a call. I'd love to talk to you.
Hey, thank you so much. And for everyone who is listening, if you're listening, please remember to subscribe to our podcast or subscribe to our YouTube channel. It really helps us out a lot. And to learn more about the work that we do here at WeExcel, just go to wexl.org. I'm Arabella DeLuco, and until next time, thank you so much for joining us.